energy that comes from the earth is real here. You can feel it. You can feel it. If there is not something done to address what happened here to black people, to brown people, to Native Americans, whose soil this is originally, then yeah, I think, you know, the spirits will brew again. That's just what I feel.
From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. And I want to let you know that this episode has some descriptions of racial violence and several mentions of a suicide. This episode comes to us from producer Taylor Hosking.
At first, everybody used to say riot. It wasn't a riot, it was a massacre. Mm-hmm. That's really what it was.
Bobby Eaton is a community leader in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He grew up hearing stories from the early 1900s of a time when black people were wealthy and independent.
Down there on Greenwood and Archer and Pine Street, we had over 600 businesses down there. We had black businesses, the Regal Theater was down there, movie theater, pool halls, hotels, motels, and everything down there. So affluent black people, just I'm talking about China in their homes and pianos, it was flourishing. Black Wall Street had a few black men who had airplanes in the 20s. They had their own personal airplanes that they flew around and stuff, you know. That's what it was here in Black Wall Street.
Greenwood, also known as Black Wall Street, was one of the most prosperous African-American communities in the country. It became wealthy largely because of the communal spirit that came out of segregation.
Because black people at that particular time had to work within themselves. They couldn't get loans and things from white banks and businesses, so they kept that to themselves. That black dollar went around, it would go to you, go to somebody else, went to somebody else, and come back to me. If I were building a house back in those days, the community and black men would get up there and help you build that house. It was a lot of unity.
But now the neighborhood is mostly open space with a highway running through it. It burnt to the ground 99 years ago, and many were told to never discuss what happened there.
I didn't understand why it was never discussed, because it was one of America's best-kept secrets.
But the few elders like Bobby who learned the story of Black Wall Street kept its spirit alive. They passed down the stories to the younger generation. And now, against all odds, there's a group of Tulsan rappers grappling with the largest race massacre in American history. And they're doing it at a time when the country is reckoning with its continued terrorism of black people. The rappers of Tulsa are building a new Black Wall Street, and they're starting it in a mansion that was once owned by a famous Tulsan Klansman.
Yes, yes, yes. Check, check. Fire in Little Africa.
Wall Street, down the street, around the corner, which means you're in Tulsa, motherfucking Oklahoma. Most of us grown up feeling like this city don't want us. What don't kill you on the inside, only make it stronger. Grown a stoner persona, like to pick up my diploma. Microphone clutch, like this the only thing I know to trust. Any opponent crush, making no note of this, no discussing. I'm grinding bones to dust, they don't want it more than us. My name first, I don't need a fucking hook.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
trying to leave a mark with all the exclamations.
The podcast about the unknown.
There's an antebellum-style mansion in Tulsa with tall stone columns on its porch. A grand staircase inside, multiple sprawling balconies. It's said to be modeled after Robert E. Lee's home, and there used to be Confederate murals on the walls. The Hilltop Mansion practically puffs its chest out. It was clearly built with the intention to look out on its city with pride. But today, the windows on the top floor look out over the highway. And past the highway is Greenwood. A century ago, Tulsa was a young and rapidly growing oil city, and Greenwood was a flourishing, largely autonomous Black neighborhood. Oklahoma had developed the lore of a promised land for Black Southerners. It was just outside of the former Confederacy, and a lot of the land was owned by Native American tribes and free Black men going into the 1800s. Leaders like Ida B. Wells encouraged Black Southerners to move to Oklahoma to build their own societies. And for a while there, it looked like Oklahoma might really be a good place for Black people.
You know, if you see some of the old pictures and stuff, they got on suit and ties, and the women were dressed neatly and had their hair and stuff done. And they took some pride in who they were as Black people down there on Greenwood and Black Wall Street.
This was the early 1900s, a time when a string of race massacres took place around the country. The Red Summer of 1919 had just killed hundreds of Black Americans, and Tulsa hadn't seen that kind of mass violence yet. But the Klan was just starting to get a foothold in the city. Racial tensions were high, and vigilante justice was common. On a spring day in 1921, a Black shoeshiner named Dick Rowland was accused of assaulting a white woman. He was arrested and taken to a jail cell in the courthouse. News spread that there might be a lynching, and hundreds of white protesters gathered at the courthouse demanding he be released so they could kill him. But the sheriff refused. And some hours later, a couple dozen armed Black men from Greenwood showed up, hoping they could prevent him from getting turned over to the mob. The crowd outside grew. A white protester and one of the Black men got into an argument. A shot rang out. In an instant, the fighting started, and several people, both Black and white, died. The Black men retreated back to Greenwood and did their best to fend off the white men in pursuit. Some white protesters thought it was a Black uprising. The police deputized white people, while other white people took it upon themselves to act like police. So they got guns from their homes and stole some from stores. Firefights played out across the city all night. But the worst was yet to come. In the morning, thousands of white Tulsans and the National Guard descended on Greenwood with rifles and a couple machine guns. They were killing Black people, destroying Greenwood's businesses and homes. Churches, grocery stores, hotels, and the library were burnt to the ground. Airplanes flew overhead. Some say they were firebombing the city. Black people who weren't killed were detained or chased out of town. With the neighborhood unguarded, white people threw family heirlooms and furniture into the street. Women and children joined in the looting, grabbing any jewels and valuables they could find. By the end of the day, fires destroyed nearly 40 blocks of Greenwood. Thousands of Tulsans became homeless, and thousands more were detained for up to a week at makeshift locations throughout the city. Modern historians estimate that up to 300 Tulsans died, and the vast majority of them were Black. No one was held responsible for the devastation or the millions in property damage claims that Tulsans filed in the aftermath. In fact, some early articles blame the devastation on Black Tulsans for getting out of line and inciting the frenzy. The history of Black Wall Street was largely written off as a day when all order broke down, instead of a day when the government reasserted white supremacy. There was never a reckoning or atonement. Black Tulsans eventually rebuilt some of the area, but many left, and others moved further north. and in the 1960s, the city bulldozed many of the leftover buildings and built a highway through Greenwood.
From the Tisdale, these are my visions. From the Tisdale, I can see the smoke in the earth. I can see the fire burning. I can see the kids crying cause their mom and daddy dying. I can see the bombs dropping. I can hear the sirens. I can see the people fighting. All over a shoe shiner. I can see somebody lying. I can see the hate in their eyes when they see me shining. First they love you, then they hate you, then they crucifying. I can see how far we came. I can see how far we gotta go.
Steph Simon is a 32-year-old rapper. He grew up in North Tulsa, where a lot of families resettled after they fled the fires in Greenwood. But he never knew about the history of Black Wall Street or its massacre growing up.
We always felt like we came from nothing. We felt like it was nothing out there. Like, at a point, it was just gang banging and dope. And, like, you know what I'm saying? It just felt like poverty. It felt like no opportunity. It felt like, especially for a rapper, it was like, how the fuck am I supposed to make it in rap in Oklahoma? You know what I'm saying? And people from outside the cities will tell us, like, don't say you from here. Don't nobody want to hear nobody from here. You know what I'm saying? So it was, at one point you didn't want to be from here. You felt like you had to leave in order to find some type of success.
Steph went to middle school in Greenwood, but it wasn't until he was a young adult that he stumbled on the history of Black Wall Street, largely by accident.
I was at home and I'm in my apartment. Can I say I was smoking?
Yeah.
Can we do that on this? So I'm just high, just having a me day, just a self-care me day, and just smoking and hanging out, and I'm watching YouTube, and what was hot in the streets at the time, the big thing going on in hip-hop was 50 Cent, and the Game was going at each other. And Game, it was like, man, I'm starting my own. I ain't G-Unit no more. I'm starting my own record label. It's Black Wall Street Records. And one of his homies was just screaming, Black Wall Street. It's Black Wall Street. We ain't fucking with G-Unit, blah, blah, blah. And I was a big Game fan at the time, so I'm like, I'm siding with Game. I'm siding with Black Wall Street. So while I'm watching these videos, I see on the related search section to the right, it's saying Tulsa Race Riot, Little Africa, documentary, 1921 Greenwood, all these documentaries in black and white over to the side. And I'm just like, Tulsa, you know what I'm saying? So I click it, and it just starts from the beginning.
At the turn of the 20th century, Tulsa, Oklahoma had the richest per capita wealth of any place on earth. It was dubbed the oil capital of the world, the magic city, and the city of dreams.
That was like probably one of the first documentaries outside of school that I just watched on my own too, and really watched and really sat there for the whole 2 hours, and it just really struck a nerve with me. And I was just like, why? I was so mad. Why has nobody told me this? I'm 22, 23 years old. And why I never got this information when I grew up on these streets that they talking about, you know what I'm saying? So it was crazy to see that. Why wasn't this pushed hard? Like, as a kid, it just wasn't pushed for some reason. I hated that. I hate that we didn't know that. I think it would have helped a lot of us, like, mentally, if we knew.
Steph wasn't alone. A lot of the people he grew up with didn't know about it either. They were born into a culture of silence that started as soon as the massacre ended. White Tulsans stopped talking about it. Official police records about what happened that day went missing. They basically covered it up. And many Black Tulsans grew up believing they could face consequences or even get killed for speaking about it in public.
Like, I just found that out recently, Like, that was the reason why they didn't tell us. It's because they would get shot. Police would shoot them. They would lose jobs. They would get, you know what I'm saying? They would get blackballed out of jobs. They'll get killed. Somebody come up missing. Once I found out it was a scare factor, I was like, okay, that makes sense. That's why we didn't know. They didn't want us to know that we was the shit. Like, once I found out, I just kind of took matters in my own hands and just, and my lyrics got very home base. Like, it went from never talking about Tulsa and trying to sound like I was from LA or wherever on my records, to being strictly like, y'all gonna get Tulsa when y'all hear me, because we got something that y'all need to know where we from.
Hey, hey, break yourself, I'm taking what you owe me. Diamonds on me, girl, I'm Dickie Rollin'. Shining on my pinky ring and swollen. Whistle Elsa, I can't let it go. Something came and got me in my zone. Something came and sparked a homie soul. I feel like I seen it all before. All my blacks eating across the board. See you want it, buy it, then you own it. Put your pot with mine, let's make it grow. All we need is trust, get off that whole shit. Hope him solid jimmies and Sakota. Mess around and I done found my purpose. Mess around and I done found my word. Spend with mine, I've had it. Make them nervous, swim with mine if I'm gonna make a purchase. Circle A.
Back when Steph Simon first started looking for gigs in the early 2010s, there was virtually no audience in Tulsa for political, experimental rap. But Steph started hitting the pavement with CDs in the city's artsy downtown music scene.
The mastermind of the half, tell me stay humble, really I be trying, really I'm just tired eating TV dinner, so I had to go and shift the paradigm, really I'm just had to break the cycle down, rich blacks all around, hey, hey, rich blacks all around, rich blacks all around, hey, rich blacks all around, rich blacks all around, rich blacks all around, hey.
Steph eventually connected with other like-minded rappers like Algebra, St. Dominic, King Cut, and another conscious rapper named Verse.
I remember when this wasn't a destination, came from a place where they raised you to lower your expectations. We was just trying to leave a mark with all the exclamations. Bless the pavement for every single block that was decimated. I just want to write a rap like the case for reparations. Speak some self-belief and hope that that message is contagious. Speak some truth to power knowing that them steps is dangerous. I walk through the valley of the shadow with some banging shit.
Yo, that's crazy. That was dope.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For sure. When we first started going down here, there were like punk shows and I think it was weird at first because you, especially as we got more black people down there, like the people who are here, as progressive or not progressive, whatever they are, they're not used to seeing this amount of black people that started coming downtown.
Verse, Steph Simon, and other rappers started performing packed shows at previously white venues, telling a story that so many of their peers had never heard. But that story was actually still being written.
With the Black Lives Matter movement kind of being in this same time frame, again, like blackness became way more of a topic of conversation. So I think the people were listening more to the people that had been talking about Greenwood and Black Wall Street. And then in 2012, there was an article in This Land magazine. It was a local paper out here. By Leroy Chapman, rest in peace. And the article connected Tate Brady to the race massacre as one of the organizers of it.
Tate Brady is an Oklahoma icon. He's sometimes called a founder of Tulsa. He helped establish the city in its early days, and he got rich from opening a prominent hotel near Greenwood. Tulsa honored him by putting his name all over the city, on streets, a theater, a tavern, two of the city's districts. Tate Brady was considered a hero. But that 2011 article in This Land showed Tulsans another story, Brady was a defender of the Confederacy and a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Earlier in his life, he was the victim of violence, and later in life, he allegedly tarred and feathered some members of a local union. And on the night of the massacre, Brady was there, defending the land around his hotel. The next morning, he reported that he'd watched a black man get dragged behind a car by a noose, and that he'd seen several other dead black bodies. After the massacre, he quit the Klan. And yet, in the years that followed, he still did business with the Klan, selling them land to build a meeting hall that could seat thousands of people. And when the black community was trying to rebuild, Brady was trying to turn Greenwood into an industrial district that could further separate the races. After the article came out, Steph, Verse, and other Tulsan rappers helped advocate for removing Brady's name from public locations across the city. That movement had some successes, but they weren't able to fully remove Brady's name from Tulsa. And those failures showed that the city was still divided over reconciling the history of the massacre.
Red summer, it's about to be a red summer. We dropping bombs over Brady, yeah. And now we ballin' like the maybe. Too many times fell short trying to make it. Now we shooting shots long ranging like 33 tips in the driveway. Nobody told me having more was the hard way, but it's about to pay off, did it the sharp way. And we gon' take it to be okay at the Barclays, yeah.
Despite the setbacks, Steph's interest in Tate Brady grew. He recorded an album called Born on Black Wall Street, and he became fixated with the nearby Brady Mansion, the grand, three-story, southern plantation-style home modeled after Robert E. Lee's house, the one that sits on top of a hill overlooking Greenwood. Brady lived there at the time of the massacre, as well as in the subsequent years when the KKK became even more prominent in the city. He hosted events at the house for the sons of Confederate veterans, and the house is also where he eventually shot himself after his son died in a car crash.
Well, I knew whose house this was since I was a kid. I drove by it forever. My first time coming in this house was when I was shooting the album cover for Born on Black Wall Street.
Steph showed up without getting anyone's permission first. He stood on the front steps with the Brady Mansion in the background. And as he posed, a car came down the street. He heard the driver slam on their brakes and roll down the window.
And he like hit the brake and he was like, Steph.
So when I seen him at the house, he had no idea. I'm like, Steph, what's up? What's going on with you?
It was Felix Jones, a former running back for the Dallas Cowboys and Pittsburgh Steelers. Felix and Steph grew up together. He was also mesmerized by the house since he was a kid. And to Steph's surprise, Felix had just bought the Brady Mansion.
I don't know how we got into it, but I asked him, did you want to go inside? He was like, what you mean? You want to go inside and look around?
We go in and we showing us everything. We go upstairs. Down in the kitchen. He killed himself in the kitchen. We go in the kitchen. I'm like, this is creepy. We go in the basement. I'm like, ew. We go upstairs. We, like, he was like, man, I want to start a record label with you. And I said, bro, let me put a stage in here and throw a show. Let's do it. Sold out show. We staged the place. We just trying to get all the spirits up out of this thing that we can. And really rebrand this place and just recultivate it and push positivity out of it this time.
So in 2018, Steph invited about 100 black kids to the former Brady Mansion to party on the lawn while he filmed a music video for his single, Upside.
Steph Simon, tell them what you wanna do, baby. Let them know.
Man, I put that on the couch. Ain't nobody fucking with the flow. Woke up mud like a nigga spit Folgers. I been focused. I been passing out flavor like.
So Upside, like, my goal was always to put, like, a bunch of black people in front of this house on the yard, like, just to be there. I feel like our attendance and us just being is enough. We didn't have to be out here yelling fight the power. We didn't have to be out here with signs. Like, we don't have to do that because people just don't like our existence, period. All we gotta do is be present. We just gotta be us.
This is a city where black families were once terrorized for flourishing and creating joy on their own. And Steph had a bouncy house set up on a Klansman's lawn. There were slam dunk competitions, Soul Train line, Millie rocking, adults and kids just being silly.
They just came out and showed up for me. And that was kind of one of, I want to say that day is when things really start changing for me as far as my support. It got real strong.
Ain't nobody gonna stop my mission. Nobody's gonna catch me slipping. Yeah, yeah. We ain't worried about much, we chillin'. Yeah, yeah. You stressing about who you trippin'. Yeah, yeah. Ain't nobody gonna stop my mission. Yeah, yeah. Ain't nobody's gonna catch me slipping. Yeah, yeah. We ain't worried about much, we chillin'.
Yeah, yeah. I have a secret plan to save humanity. And it starts in Oklahoma.
She threatens to disrupt peace.
In 2019, the comic series Watchmen was turned into a TV series on HBO, and the TV show is based on the Tulsa Massacre. The opening scene shows bombs going off, people being shot and dragged through the streets behind cars, children trying to escape under siege. It was the first time many Americans had ever seen a reenactment of what it could have looked like back in 1921. It brought Tulsa back into the national conversation just as a new era of Black Lives Matter protesters called people to learn the racist history of our policing system. But Watchmen was just the beginning of a new wave of content retelling Tulsa's story, because next year is the 100th anniversary of the massacre. Film crews and documentary makers and celebrities are all showing up to tell their own version of Black Wall Street's story. Presidential candidates are trying to use Tulsa to make their own statements about Black America. And with all this attention, the city of Tulsa has decided to go all in on its own glitzy commemoration, trying to paint itself as a model of reconciliation, even though Black Tulsans are still dealing with the consequences of the massacre today. The rappers of North Tulsa want to make sure that their stories and their rhymes are heard in this media frenzy. So Steph Simon, Verse, and 60 other Oklahoma artists are all working together on a commemorative album for the centennial anniversary. It's called Fire in Little Africa. They recorded most of the album at the former Brady Mansion over one weekend in March, just days before the virus started shutting things down. So I met them at the house to see what lessons they think the world should take away from the story of Black Wall Street.
Sitting on this balcony is crazy because it gives you an idea of what was going on, like when stuff went down.
I'm grateful for the silence of the ancestors. Charlie Wilson said it on the Breakfast Club. It's like, if they weren't silent, they wouldn't be able to live and to have children so that we could be the ones to talk about it. Like, people sacrifice their authenticity because they were afraid that people were going to kill them. So it's like I had to be quiet so that you could say something.
Stevie Johnson is the executive producer of the album. The idea for Fire in Little Africa came to him after he had a dream about rebuilding Black Wall Street.
It's like, no, like having a dream and knowing every detail to the point where you wake up in a cold sweat. And I just started getting on my laptop and started writing like things I just had to remember. The whole, like, can Black Wall Street be Black Wall Street again? Like, that was the actual vision, the dream. And it was so clear. And those visions are part of, like, Fire in Little Africa.
At the Mansion House, I started to see how the community embodies what Black Wall Street was all about. While the album was being recorded in six different rooms, other rappers and community members were making podcasts and video documentaries about the project. They were wearing each other's clothing lines and giving each other advice on book or movie ideas in the hallways. There was a Black-owned legal marijuana business tabling in the living room. And they even had their own chicken wing food truck, TNC Wang's, parked out front with menu items named after artists in the scene.
We have this Everything Is Us system, which is like a DIY, do-it-yourself system. And we're building sustainability. We're building an industry for ourselves.
I can't knock somebody who lives in North Tulsa that has a capitalistic mindset, because literally that's the world we live in. The wealth gap continues to expand. And people are like, yo, I got to get my scraps, which is what we're fighting over. Get my scraps so I can just hold on to it and protect my family. Because at any moment, I'll get shot or killed by somebody I know or by the police. So I get it, but I'm really trying to show people that there's a different way to embody, like, cultural capital, cultural wealth. And, like, it just goes back to, like, the blueprint we already had, which is Black Wall Street. Yeah, that's just kind of where my head is at. Like, yeah, it really wasn't until I started doing this project of like, yo, like, something's different around here, and we gotta move different, we gotta talk different, we have to think different, and let people know, like, community really is the true essence of, like, becoming free. This really is the formation of a, like, a utopia that we're trying to learn how to protect so that, you know, white people don't try to take it from us again.
Black people building their own opportunity is still a powerful idea in Tulsa, because local activists have been fighting the government for decades without much change. Stevie's dream is to unite the community to build a new Black Wall Street with its own economy, education system, and policing system. But the idea of Black economic independence is still threatening to some.
Yeah, for sure. I've already received hate mail. Yeah, like, go back to where you came from. Like, yeah, it's been ugly. Yeah, it's happening. It's going to continue to happen. Like, I'm not afraid of any of that. But, like, when you realize, like, what you've been created or what you've been called to do, like, nothing matters. Like, nothing.
There was a sense in the house that the project would work best if the ancestors were given their chance to speak. Some rappers were writing and recording 7-8 songs that they had just started that weekend. They were thinking through the symbolism of recording in the house's basement, the kitchen where Brady killed himself, the maid's quarters, trying to let something outside of themselves get released.
I'm very in tune with, like, spirituality. The city is, we some stones, rocking, astrology, people, like, we, like, that's who we are out here. Like, we some energy yeah. Freaks. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
that's what this city is. And we are all going on this spiritual journey, and it's like, man, it's just something going on out here. It's like something in the water, it's something in the air. Like, can you feel it? And people, we would just be like, yeah, man, like, I can feel it too. Like, and we all moving on the same frequency right now. And it's beautiful.
it does feel poetic. It does feel meant to be in that, the way that this thing came together with the people that are involved in it, for sure.
But sometimes when it comes to the spiritual thing, some stuff just not does not make sense. Like, I get it. Some stuff just doesn't. And that's the beauty of Black Wall Street. So it's like a really, like, divine connection that a lot of people don't understand. But as long as I understand it and Step understands it and the other artists, and like, the vibranium is really the Holy Spirit that's like allowing us to move and make some things shake and gonna take the world by storm when it comes to like hip hop and just like just how we do shit here in Tulsa.
Was on the edge of a cliff, but I wasn't letting go. Treading water with all of the strength in my legs when the currents tested those. Swerving on a hectic road. Respect the coach, respect the players that accepted roles. Knowing you can't put all of the game in the X's and O's. I was determined with my hand down, working for every good person I know that never found purpose. Everybody now searching why it sounds urgent. A wordsmith dug a canal out the underground to the surface. And the town was deserted, I was curb serving. What's the verdict? On all counts, I knew what I put in, it wasn't a small amount.
When I first got to Tulsa, I thought the city's artists wanted a sense of revenge, to make Brady roll in his grave for all the Black people who lost their homes and all the Black people who don't call this city home anymore. But Steph explained the goal isn't just to fight another leg of this battle.
I'm not about to sit here and battle a dead man forever for what he did. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he did what he did, and now hopefully he's like forgave himself and forgave us, and it's just like, y'all go ahead and do the shine, you know what I'm saying? Do y'all thing. 100 years later, it's a Black owned house, and it's also a studio, and it's also a music venue, and it's also a kitchen for, you know what I'm saying, for people that cook out of and things like that. So it's more of a table's turn. Like, it just, it's karma, man. Like, that's what happens. And that's what should happen to all of them. Like, this ain't the only mansion that stood for that here. This is just one of them, so.
Taking over the Brady Mansion was really a spiritual act to cleanse and heal. Not just the generational trauma within Black communities, but also the sickness of inheriting white supremacy so that the entire city can have a more prosperous future. Steph's comment reminded me of a conversation I had with a spoken word artist in the community, Written Quincy, who opened this episode.
You can feel it. You can feel it.
He said, it doesn't matter how many buildings you build. It's about the energy that runs through a place that makes people want to live there.
If there is not something done to address what happened here to Black people, to brown people, to Native Americans whose soil this is originally, I think the growth of Tulsa will be in jeopardy.
People want to visit this city today because of the history of Black Wall Street and the Black music and arts culture that sprung out of it. For decades, white Tulsans thought that erasing Black history and building some new identity was the best way to move forward. But now that Black people are finding their voice to lead again, the city seems to have a real life to it and a real shot at creating a better future for itself. Tulsa's story shows that governments can't silence Blackness with force. There's more to consider than just winners writing the history books, the speeches, the headlines, because Black culture tells a powerful story too. Just the faded memory of Black Wall Street got people to believe they could succeed in Tulsa, they could heal their own wounds, that they could build a world they've never seen, and they already have everything they need to do that. Today, Black Lives Matter protesters are trying to end our country's long relationship with lynchings. But it's clear that America's far from atonement. It seems just as willing to repeat its mistakes today as it ever was.
And when you see those lunatics all over the streets, it's damn nice to have arms. Damn nice.
Reckoning with true history shows us that trying to control Black people shortchanges everybody. And in the end, James Baldwin already said it best when he pointed out that the country only has a bright future if Black Americans do.
The future of the Negro in this country is precisely as bright or as dark as the future of the country.
You can see that in Tulsa. Its greatness depends on whether Black Wall Street can become Black Wall Street again.
This is a gym call. If you need a membership in it, then you can't be fraud. This a fraternity. This a sorority. But we far from Greek. This where the creators meet. So discreet, making moves while you sleep. Got our tokens up, now we play for keeps. Everything is us, everything we need. We already got, and we live by it like a creed. We connected like a set, so and see. Ready to invest, my congregation elite. Conversation unique, play our roles to the T. Foundation built off trust, a world oil machine. And we ain't come to riot or march, we want results. We coming to take your pockets apart. Taking control of the art, taking control of the block. The benefit we gon' reap as long as you play your part. Be no lame, be no lie, be no fraud. Grab a seat, get a play, be no star. Get the bread, help the need, heal the scar. We in charge, this is all, be no hard.
The album Fire in Little Africa comes out in February of 2021. You can learn more about that project at fireinlittleafrica.com. We also have a link up on our website, which is hbmpodcast.com. And there, you'll find links to all the research that we referenced in this episode, pictures from the Oklahoma Historical Society, and a YouTube playlist of all the music you heard. Again, we're at hbmpodcast.com. Taylor Hosking produced this episode of Here Be Monsters. Taylor is a freelance reporter based in New York City, and she's just published an article about Tulsa over on CityLab. It's called Avenging the Tulsa Race Massacre with Hip Hop. And we also have that linked up on our website, too. You know, so many people helped this episode come together, both on mic and off. So we really want to thank Steph Simon, Verse, Stevie Johnson, King Cut, Written Quincy, Bobby Eaton, Felix Jones, Dan Hahn, Michelle Brown, Chris Davis, Shruti Dalwala, Brandon Oldham, Ben Lindsay, John Delore, the George Kaiser Family Foundation, the Oklahoma Historical Society, the Woody Guthrie Center, and the late Leroy Chapman. Thank you. My name is Jeff Emptman. I edited this episode along with help from Bethany Denton. The music you heard came from Verse, Steph Simon, and The Black Spot. Now, this marks the end of our 8th season of shows, so Beth and I are about to take our summer vacation, and then hopefully we'll be back in the fall for season 9. In the meantime, though, we're about to start our summer art exchange, and if you haven't signed up yet, you'd better hurry because I'm just about to take down that sign-up form. So join us this summer as we all mail art to each other. Sign up at hbmpodcast.com/art. You should also follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. To be honest, though, Beth and I aren't the greatest at social media. So if you would really like to help us out, and I hope you do, there's really just two things that make a big difference. First, consider becoming a member of KCRW. They're the ones who pay our bills. They're the ones who keep us going. They're a great station. And so you can support us and some other really great shows at join.kcrw.com. And the second thing you can do, and this one doesn't cost you a dime, is you can share our show with someone you care about. It really makes such a difference. You know, our show is not very search engine friendly, and we don't advertise very much. And so we're really reliant on people like you just sending an episode or two to your best friend or your dentist or your life coach, etc. It really helps. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Now, before we leave you for summer, I want to offer a benediction of sorts. I recently reached out to a couple Here Be Monsters listeners to ask if they'd record some audio from protests in their cities. So in just a moment, I'll play you a short montage of audio that was recorded by Neroli Price in Seattle, Washington, Brianna Bowie in Wilmington, North Carolina, and Bethany Donkin in Oxford, UK. Thank you all for recording and sharing. Here Be Monsters is distributed by KCRW. Our senior editor there is Kristen Lepore. We get additional support for our freelance contributions from KCRW's Independent Producer Project. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.